The term fake news has been bandied around quite a lot lately. It's become a fashionable term, hasn't it, of course, and conspiracy theories and all that very much a part of our everyday vocabulary now. And Professor of Journalism Stephen Jukes from Bournemouth University joins me. This is following a TED Talk that Wendy and I watched and found it really interesting. So we're just going to kind of look at that whole subject right now. Good afternoon, Stephen. How are you?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you. I think I'd rather be in Spain than here. I'm thinking about putting the heating on.
Are you in Bournemouth? Do you live in Bournemouth?
No, I'm actually in London at the moment. Oh, okay. But it's pouring down the rain and it's miserable.
But I say Bournemouth's always quite nice, so I've got family there.
It's got the best weather ever.
Yeah. okay, you need to make your way there as soon as you can, I think. It doesn't look very good in the UK weather-wise, but we're okay here. I'm still not in the duvet season yet, so we're okay. This is a fascinating topic, and it almost feels like, Stephen, that this kind of term fake news has come all about. You know, Donald Trump's kind of capitalised on it, and it really has become part of our psyche every day, I suppose, for the last 7 or 8 years. But really, it's nothing new, is it? How far back does fake news go and misinformation and so on?
Well, I think that's right. It's very, very difficult not to think about fake news when you're talking about media these days. But in fact, you can trace it back all the way to, you know, the Greek myths, Antony and Cleopatra, the Roman times. There was a famous incident in the 19th century in New York where a newspaper ran a whole series about having discovered a man on the moon with drawings and what have you. War of the Worlds, H.G. Wells, in the late 1930s, where people in New York ran out onto the street thinking that a radio play was a Martian invasion. Yes. So it's been around for a long time. But I think what's happened is that social media, and we're talking, I suppose, the last 15 years or so, has given a real kick. And in turn, so too has COVID-19, the pandemic, has given it another lease of life. Yeah. So it's been around for a long time, and we tend to forget that, but it really has, you know, had a new lease of life.
I mean, I can go back to my kind of Bible college days when I was studying about the holy canon of scripture and the Bible days and the different councils that were putting together that. Some didn't make it in because they were considered fake news. They weren't the proper gospels or whatever. So it really has, and we can go back even further, can't we, ancient Egypt and so on, and just see aspects of fake news and falsehoods as well. I suppose, really, it's been there ever since human beings have been around.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. People have always tried to manipulate events or pull the wool over people's eyes and what have you. I mean, I've been a journalist for many, many years before I went into the academic world, working for Reuters. There's a news agency all over the world. And, you know, verification was, you know, we lived and breathed verification. Objectivity, yeah. Fact-based journalism. You know, to be frank, there's not a lot new in the world when it comes to these discussions. It's just that I think, you know, sometimes we also forget what fake news is. And, you know, I often, you know, talk to students about these subjects and I ask them, and then suddenly after about 2 or 3 minutes, you realize that there are lots and lots of different types of fake news. I mean, you know, we talk about clickbait. So one definition of fake news is news designed to make money, news to tempt you to click on something online, whereby the person who's presented that news, produced it, is then earning money through advertising revenue through the clicks. Or, so that's for cash, basically.
Yeah.
Or there's so much fake news, which is for political manipulation. And that's really sometimes no more than the spin, what we used to call spin in political terms. And then there's just bad journalism, you know, people getting it wrong. Mm. And then, of course, there's the Trump variation of fake news, which is when essentially fake news equates to news he finds uncomfortable or he doesn't like. And that's quite damaging, I think, because if you think about the New York Times and their expose, if you like, or their scoop on having his tax returns, and Trump's first reaction was to say, oh, it's fake news, I pay millions. And of course, the more he says that, the more we might be inclined to actually think, well, maybe the New York Times got it wrong. Maybe they're not all his tax returns. So if you protest loudly enough, maybe that's what happens. So fake news can also be, you know, news I don't like, news that's uncomfortable.
In that case, though, I mean, he's doing something quite, I suppose, shrewd in some respects. He's appealing to his base. When he says that, he's got the people in mind and those that will say, you know what, it doesn't matter what you tell me about his tax situation. We don't care. We're going to vote for him anyway. And I think that's exactly it. So he's very astute when it comes to that. A lot of people write him off as a buffoon.
I think that's one of the traits of fake news, that it can play to your own prejudices.
Yeah.
It can confirm you in your own beliefs. And so when people fall for fake news, quite often it's news which they might like to see or might like to hear or read. So it does tend to... It's clever, it's subtle sometimes. I mean, it's not always subtle, sometimes it's not. But it can play into your own feelings and your own biases. Yeah. And that's why it can be very successful in deceiving people.
I think the biggest issue I have, and this is where, and I still really haven't got an answer to this, so maybe you can help me here, Professor, if you can. I heard another professor say the other day that you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. Facts are facts. But quite often, statistics, as we've seen here with the COVID-19 thing, can be reported in so many different ways. And then we've got the added thing where we go on to a website that's saying that we're telling the truth, we're reporting the truth, but actually being funded by somebody that has another interest. And so that we're always being told to look who's funding those news stories and so on. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think I really struggle, because whereas before, you used to just believe what a particular news outlet would say because you've always believed them. Now I'm taking everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, and I think that's to be understood. I mean, in the old world, we probably had the BBC and a few commercial radio stations, and they were known factors. You know, they had journalists who were paid, and they had a sort of a code of practice whereby they stuck to the facts. Today, of course, it's not like that. No. I mean, we have partisan radio, we have partisan television, yes. Think of Fox, and we have other sort of what we would call in the academic world disintermediation, which means that, you know, instead of Boris Johnson holding a press conference and the press dutifully reporting stuff which we might read the next day, now it's being tweeted out at source. And so, you know, the middleman, the established news organization, is being cut out of the loop, if you like.
Yeah.
So Trump gets up in the morning, first thing we see is all those tweets. He's not talking to the New York Times. He's not on television. He's actually avoiding that because quite often there are difficult questions there. So, you know, the whole social media has really changed the dynamic of news and quite often cut out those established players. And as they are cut out, disintermediated, so you have this vacuum which appears, either so you can feed news directly to the public, or you can feed misinformation or spun news directly to the public. And, you know, that's, it's a different type of what's going on. But I think if you look at the, if you look at what's going on with COVID, what we're seeing is quite a lot of conspiracy theory. We're seeing, you know, the elites being attacked, Bill Gates, for instance. And a lot of this is right-wing, far-right, extreme propaganda, which is seeping in. The idea that, you know, 5G, a conspiracy theory that 5G masks were responsible for COVID, or that wearing a mask is useless, or the anti-vaxxers. So this can be quite damaging as well, because these conspiracy theories do sometimes confirm our own biases and prejudices and feelings.
And that's the thing, who's to blame really here? Because I was listening today, because of course we've had the big debate last night in the States, and I was listening to somebody on Trump's side talk about, kind of avoid questions about white supremacists, and and how he didn't really condemn those. And then I heard somebody else. And years ago, I would maybe have heard even the Trump supporter say, well, yes, he should have done that. Or yes, I agree, he should have done that, but he didn't. But there's none of that. There's no middle ground anymore. There just doesn't seem to be any coming together of the both sides. And I'm wondering whether the media is mirroring, this is a big question, mirroring our society as the society is polarized, or is the media partly to blame for the polarization of our society?
It's a chicken and egg question. I think the answer is part of one and part of the other. Six of one and a half a dozen of the other. I think media reflects society, but society is also sometimes framed by media. But I do think what's happened is that with social media, our debate has become, our so-called rational public sphere debate has become polarized. So effectively, things are very black and white. So what Trump says, this, that, and the other is good, or this, that, and the other is bad. He's a bad man. It becomes very black and white and very polarized. Mm. And I think, politicians should take some of the blame for that. I mean, every time Trump calls journalists enemies of the people, he's undermining the press. He's undermining the institution of journalism. And I would say that, wouldn't I? But
has he not got a point? I mean, I watch some journalism today and I think, how on earth are you? You're so biased in one direction and not really listening to the other side of the argument. And that can be for both sides, of course.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that. I mean, I think there are times, I don't think reputable organizations deserve to be called enemies of the people. I mean, journalism is there to, hold people like Trump and Boris Johnson to account. And I think, generally speaking, they do a good job. But every time an autocratic leader somewhere in the world calls journalists enemies of the people, they lock them up.
Yeah.
They torture them. They kill them in countries all over the world, in Southeast Asia, in Mexico, all over the world. Journalists are being essentially, put under a lot of pressure for trying to do their job. And I'm not trying to, make a case for journalists as some special, hero in society. But every time politicians denigrate journalism, we're undermining trust in the institution. And goodness knows, journalism has undermined trust in itself enough over the past. You think of the Leveson Inquiry and what have you, and tabloid press. But it is problematic. And I think, we've got to try and think, who's responsible. So journalists are responsible, not for producing clickbait stories, which are faff, basically. Politicians are responsible. I think they can behave a lot more responsibly. I think we can think also about self-regulation by the social media companies. What is Facebook doing? What is Twitter doing in order to protect us from disinformation? Arguably not enough. I think, this might not be terribly fair if I was working for Facebook, but my impression sometimes is that these organizations are trying very hard to cut down on fake news, but also they have a motive for doing that because they want to avoid statutory regulation from the authorities. Mm. And so far they've managed to stave that off, more or less.
It's a massive subject, and we're quickly running out of time. And I don't think we're going to put the world to rights all in one session. So maybe we need to get you back on. When it comes to you touched on conspiracy theories earlier, and of course we're coming up to this time where there may be a vaccination coming. Years ago, of course, my mum and dad would have had me vaccinated, never did me any harm. Well, some might say. But it was just almost like, well, that's fine, it's accepted. Now there's we've seen surveys recently saying that only one third of Spanish people, for instance, would actually take the vaccine. One third would refuse, and another third are open to kind of be swayed in either direction. Why are we in this place now? Are you putting that down to social media again? Is that kind of driving that side of it?
Well, I'm not sure if it is social media, because think of the MMR vaccine where, you know, a generation of children was not vaccinated here in Britain, or fewer were vaccinated than normal, essentially because one doctor propagated his views that it was harmful. And that was really partially, well, not really, with the help of social media, with traditional media. So I do think there's going to be a real debate about this, and it's going to be carried out on social media, and it is going to be, as we said before, very polarized, quite black and white. And the anti-vaxxers tend to have this, there is this coalition which is around anti-vaxxers, anti-masks. We've seen these massive demonstrations in cities like London, Berlin, New York, and also the QAnon conspiracy theorists and the far right, extreme right. And it all sort of comes together. And I think one of the real challenges will be in public information. I mean, I personally can't see why you wouldn't want to be vaccinated. But the government needs to be able to have a very clear message about this. And if you've looked at what the government has been doing in Britain over the past days about lockdowns in the northeast of England, the government is clearly confused about its own policy. So there's a real lesson for here about clear communication through trusted channels. But of course, all these conspiracy theories also undermine our trust in these institutions, such as government and politicians. So I don't have any great answers to these. I just see the need for transparency, clarity, and verified facts. I suppose in the old days we used to call evidence-based journalism.
And I heard a professor talking about this as well, similar situation. He is obviously pro-vaccine vaccinations, and he said, as far as the conspiracy theories are, we're leaving them alone. Whatever we say will never convince them. So we're working with those who they're trying to kind of, it's kind of a bit of a battle zone. They're trying to reach these people as well. There's almost a swing voters, I suppose, if you want to put it in political terms. But interesting stuff. We're right out of time, Stephen. But I think if it's okay with you, I'd love to get you back on again, because I think we only just skimmed the surface on all of this, and there's so much more we could delve into. But Professor Stephen Jukes, talking about fake news and misinformation from Bournemouth University there. I really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you, Professor.
That's fine. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much.